KALW.
It's a lot, but it's also necessary to put your voice in for everything.
Bay Area residents have dozens of propositions and candidates to consider. With Election Day just 3 weeks away, we're here to help clarify what you're voting on.
And if you don't, then higher-ups will just take the money from that and put it into something they want instead of what the people want.
We'll talk about the effort to get out the vote in the lowest voter turnout precincts. Then, actor Brian Copeland brings back one of his solo shows to help people cope with the pandemic.
People who suffer from depression are really suffering, and people who don't normally suffer from depression are suffering from depression.
And we hear from a local author's latest novel.
It's about two sisters who are searching for a menorah stolen from their mother in 1939 by the Nazis.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. As Election Day approaches, here at KALW, we're focusing on communities with historically low voter turnout in five Bay Area counties. We're focusing on West Oakland in Alameda County, Richmond's Iron Triangle in Contra Costa County, Bayview Hunters Point in San Francisco, East Palo Alto in San Mateo County, and Fairfield in Solano County. And here with me today to talk about our elections coverage is our elections manager, Sonia Narang. Hey, Sonia.
Hi, Hannah.
So can you talk about how you decided on these five areas?
We wanted to focus on areas that have had historically low voter turnout. We want to provide fair coverage to places that have been undercovered and misrepresented, because there must be some reasons they aren't getting the information that they've needed to go out and vote. You know, we want to put our audience in the driver's seat by serving them and helping them make informed decision when it comes time to vote in the future.
Mm-hmm. And so what are you doing? What are some of the initiatives you're pursuing to reach these communities and to listen to them?
Well, we're using a few different strategies. You know, one is we really feel that it's important to engage with the community organizations that are already rooted in these communities. Mm-hmm. So that includes places of worship. It includes youth groups, libraries, diversity groups. There's leagues of women voters. There's Filipino-American multicultural groups. And we want to reach out to them to find out, well, what are they thinking about? And what are the people that they work with thinking about? Mm-hmm. And another component is that we're working with media outlets who have been focusing on these communities for a long time. So there's Oakland Side that is focusing in on West Oakland. There's also Richmond Confidential that's run through the UC Berkeley School of Journalism, and El Tecolote newspaper, which is a Spanish language newspaper based in San Francisco. And they've been focusing a lot on issues in East Palo Alto and Bayview Hunters Point. So, mm-hmm. you know, these media partnerships are going to allow for us to reach a wider audience, a more diverse audience, and also find out what are the issues that our media partner journalists and editors are hearing about on the ground.
Right.
We also are going into the field. It's difficult in these pandemic times, but the door hangers essentially say that this election, KALW Public Radio wants to cover what matters to you. And we're asking people in English and in Spanish, well, what are the biggest challenges in your neighborhood? And then we're telling them three easy ways to get in touch. So they can either call us, email us, or go to our Facebook page and send us a message.
What are people saying?
It's interesting. People are saying different things. In fact, our news director, Ben Trefney, has been talking to people as he distributes door hangers. He's been mostly spending time in Bayview Hunters Point. He talked to a young lady this past weekend about, you know, how she's trying to get out the vote in her community and why that's important. And here's a little bit of what she had to say. And this is Louise Claire Vistel.
So this would be your first election, presidential election coming up.
Yes.
Are you planning on voting?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know what all you have to vote on in San Francisco?
I've been going through the books this week with my mom about all the different processes for helping people in neighborhoods, mm-hmm. the whole cars, and who we have to vote for president, obviously. But hopefully vote for the right things that help people who don't have much.
Mm-hmm. Because there are 26 ballot measures that you have to vote on in San Francisco.
The book's thick.
Yeah. Do you think that how does that feel to have that much stuff to vote on?
It's a lot, but it's also necessary to put your voice in for everything. You have to, obviously everybody says voting matters because that shows how many people really care about all these different things. And if you don't, then higher-ups will just do whatever they want or take the money from that and put it into something they want instead of what the people want.
So we're talking to people who are first-time voters. We're talking to people who are getting out the vote in their communities. And we're also hearing from people who have issues on their mind. And one of the topics that has been coming up in multiple communities is the concern about illegal dumping. That came up through questions that we received on our website in Richmond. And we also heard through our community outreach that folks in West Oakland were concerned about the same thing. So, you know, one of the things we're doing is we're making election briefs on every county measure. And in Oakland, there's measure RR that would adjust the fine that illegal dumpers would face if they're caught.
Right. And that's just one example.
Exactly. Exactly. That's just one example. So, you know, we're hoping to clarify these ballot measures through our election briefs. And then from hearing from the people that we communicate with on the ground, we want to report on stories that they bring up, that they bring to our attention. You know, we don't want to just come up with story ideas that we think are important. Mm-hmm. We want them to really fuel what we're reporting on. And mm-hmm. that would then encourage them to participate more and to become voters in the next election.
Right. So what happens then after the elections are done? You have all of these connections right now. You've made all these relationships around the Bay Area. What then?
Well, Hannah, that's a great question. We're actually planning to continue the work in these communities. So it doesn't end on November 3rd with the election. We're planning to continue in these same communities, and we want to focus on health and equity issues in the early part of 2021. And, you know, then we can report on issues that we're getting already. For example, we got an email from someone who got our door hanger in Palo Alto saying that they're very concerned about the lack of access to affordable food in their community. Mm. And this is a long-term resident of East Palo Alto. Mm. So this is a story that we can report on after the election, you know, to dig into deeper. So this is just the beginning of what's to come.
Okay. Sonia Narang, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Hana.
That's Sonia Narang. She's KALW's election coverage manager. What we're doing is a team effort, and we'd love for you to get involved. Whether you'd like to hand out voter materials out in the low voter turnout precincts we talked about, or if you've got elections questions our reporters can answer. And we've got three easy ways for you to connect. You can call us at 415-684-8120. That's 415-684-8120. You can also email us at community@klw.org, or you can write us through the Bay Votes 2020 page at klw.org. Lots of ways to get in touch, so we're looking forward to hearing from you. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. National Mental Health Day was just a few days ago, but it feels like you have to treat every day in 2020 like Mental Health Day. Actor and playwright Brian Copeland knows how the weight of the world can affect our minds. His one-man show, The Waiting Period, is his personal story about depression. It covers a 10-day period in Copeland's life, which is the time you have to wait for a permit to clear before buying a gun he was planning to use to end his life. Closed theaters aren't stopping him from sharing his art to help others. He's performing free shows on the Marsh Theater's online platform right from his living room. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Brian Copeland.
So, Brian Copeland, thank you for coming on.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
How are you doing with all that's going on?
It's different from day to day, you know, because I really got to stay close to home because I'm in kind of a high risk group because I got asthma. So if I end up getting it, it's bad. It'll be really bad. So I, you know, for the past 6 months, I have left the house to go walk the dog in the morning, to go get toilet paper at Rite Aid, and to go to the Safeway. And other than that, that's it.
In this show, you talk about depression and, you know, you and I both, you know, we've talked about our own issues with depression. When did you first notice you had depression? I was about 13.
I wasn't diagnosed with it until I was in my mid-30s. But I mean, but looking back, I mean, I've dealt with it since adolescence is when it got bad. I would have just periods of time when I would just be blue. And my MO is to isolate. Kind of like what I'm doing now, except now this isn't my choice to isolate.
Were you like going through issues where you're like, why am I feeling this way? And then somebody diagnosed it, like, was that relief? Or was that like, now there's a name to it? And it was daunting.
It was a little bit to know that there was something to it and that it was a disease and I wasn't, you know, defective, so to speak. You know, my wife at the time, I was going through a rough period. My wife at the time gives me an article that she found that was the 7 signs of depression. And I had every single one of them. And that was when I went and finally came and talked to somebody. But I had I don't remember what they are now. It's been, you know, 15 years, 20 years. But I had every single one on the list.
What made you want to do this show? What prompted you to do this show?
A young man I never met by the name of Colton Fink, 15 years old, laid down in front of a moving train up in Oakley. And I said, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to tell the story because maybe if, you know, young people like him had realized that they're not alone, they'll tell somebody and they'll seek help. I play with fire every time I do that show because in the parts of the play when I'm on stage and I'm depressed, I go there. I mean, I emotionally make myself go there because if it's not real for me, it's not going to be real for you.
And let me jump in and echo that because I saw the show in its early stages and you do go there. And as somebody with depression, like I tip my hat off to you because it's not what you're doing is honorable. And I know it's helping people, but it is not easy because I don't even want to reenact my computer crashing. So I can only imagine reenacting, you know, if I'm having, you know, suicidal thoughts. I just wanted to echo that.
Yeah. So I go there, but I couldn't do it. I did about a year and a half and I couldn't do it. I had to stop and I went on and subsequently wrote and did 3 other solo plays. Then in 2014, when Robin Williams committed suicide, I knew Robin. I mean, I didn't hang out at his house and stuff, but if you're a comic in the Bay Area, you knew Robin. And, my publicist at the time was telling me how he was Rock Hudson's publicist when Rock Hudson came out and disclosed that he had AIDS. And prior to that, America looked at people with AIDS as those people.
Right.
But once Rock Hudson got it, and here's a guy who we had watched our whole lives and who'd been in our homes on television for years and these kinds of things, it provided an opportunity for America to have a conversation about AIDS and to have a conversation about who is affected and what AIDS really is and what it's like to be affected with it. And then he told me, he goes, with Robin committing suicide may finally be an opportunity for us to have that same kind of effect and that Rock Hudson had with AIDS, Robin and dealing with mental illness.
I noticed that too. And I was going to ask you, because as you said, I've noticed the stigma is weakening. Was there stigma for you when you decided to disclose? Were you hesitant?
The most surprising thing to me about that show, when I first opened that show, were so many people who I knew, who, you know, people you look at and you think that they got it all together and they, you know, they get the world on a string. And they come up and whisper in my ear, you know, I deal with that. You know, I'm on Zoloft for that. You know, I'm taking, you know, Abilify for that. Otherwise, I would be in a really bad place.
Yeah, I experienced that when I was working at a mental health agency. They asked me to, I was doing PR for them, and they asked me to speak on Robin Williams because the executive director, she didn't feel comfortable talking to the news. So then I was like, I can't speak on him and not disclose. I just didn't feel that I was right. And so I disclosed, and I was like, okay, this is going to KTVU. So I was like, it'll go to the Bay Area. And then, like, Then I got calls from like LA because I forgot about news feeds. So
yeah.
And then somebody was like, somebody's like, my friend called from Kansas and they were like, you got depression. Why are you depressed? So it was just like.
That's the other big part of it. You say, somebody asks me, why are you depressed? And that's the other part of this show is it educates people who don't have it, uh-huh. You know, and helps them to get it, helps them to have some understanding. So they don't ask, why are you depressed? Because it's not that simple. They don't have to be a reason. You know, a lot of times there's a trigger. Other times you just wake up one day and you feel like you're walking through molasses, you know? It's an educational tool. It's for people who suffer from the disease to tell somebody that they're struggling and realize that they're not alone. And people who have family members who have it, who don't get it, it gives them an opportunity to, I take them by the hand and go, here's what's going on inside your loved one's head right now.
The theaters are shut down. You're doing this from your living room. Why are you doing it now when the theaters are shut down? We can't go see you.
Because people right now are in despair. There are people right now who deal with depression who are just in absolute despair over the state of the world and where we are right now. You know, that we're sheltered in place, that we can't go anywhere, that our worlds have become much smaller than they were 7 months ago. So that's part of it. And there are people who've never suffered from depression before, never had a bout, who are having bouts of depression and bouts of suicidal thought because of the situation. Again, we find ourselves in. It's just a lot. And you know, people who suffer from depression are really suffering, and people who don't normally suffer from depression are suffering from depression. So that's why we decided, let's go ahead and let's do it. I'll do it for the house. It's not going to be the same as when you come and see it in the theater. Maybe something I say over the course of this show will resonate with somebody. And, you know, the whole thing is, I just want to say, I always say a prayer before I go out and perform it every time. Just God, just let me save one.
That was Brian Copeland speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. You can watch his solo show, The Waiting Period, this Sunday at themarsh.org. The show runs until November 15th. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we've got a reading from our New Arrivals podcast. Think of it like a socially distanced book tour with all Bay Area authors. Here's the host, Lisa Morehouse.
Claudia Hagedis Long lives in Lafayette. Her murder mystery called 9/10 of the Law came out in March.
It's about two sisters, Zara and Lily, who are searching for a menorah stolen from their mother 80 years earlier, in 1939 by the Nazis. Their quest brings them face to face with a neo-Nazi killer, some modern performance art, and most of all with each other as they confront the ghosts of their mother's lost memories. Very early in the story, Zara and Lily visit a museum where 40 years before, Zara and their mother had seen the same menorah on display. Zara is remembering that first visit. "Do you think it's yours?" We were both very quiet. Finally, she said, "I don't know how it could be. It's here in the museum." "We should tell them," I said. She shook her head. I knew why. If we told them, we would be telling them that she was Jewish. And even 30 years after the end of the war, she couldn't do that. I should have taken her hand. I should have embraced her. I should have marched up to the museum's head and told him it was our menorah. Mom still had her hand on the glass, not quite touching the only piece of her past she had seen since coming to America. It was there on the other side of that barrier, and I failed her. I never told Lily about that visit with our mother to the museum, and I never told anyone about the menorah. Now we're standing in front of it, and my mother is speaking to me from the grave. "I'm going to get it back," I say. Get what? Lily says. I snap towards her. You see that menorah? That small carved gold one with the beautiful turquoise insets? It's ours.
That was Claudia Long reading from 9/10 of the Law.
Lisa Morehouse is the host of the New Arrivals podcast. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast player or find more readings online at kalw.org/newarrivals. And today we'll leave you with some new music from a local artist. This is Sally Mango from San Francisco, and this song is from their latest single, Undone.
Can't be the ceiling, how could I feel? Cause I've been reeling, I'm feeling like it's all too real.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Carla Estevez, Ren Farrell, Angela Johnston, and Marissa Ortega Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. News director is Ben Trefney. Opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.